guess we should say last but not least, a good colleague of Randy's is Phil Slaughterbeck from Kansas State University. Phil is our extension specialist at Garden City. His co-author in this paper is Larry Bushman, also from Garden City. And Phil will be speaking on Randy's impact on delivering research to the farm, linking research, extension, and crop consultants. Phil.
Well, I guess I had two worries about giving this presentation when I saw the schedule. One was being the last paper on the last day of whether anybody would be here, and so I appreciate everybody that's in attendance. My other fear was, as we've gone through the presentations, was being the last speaker of the symposium, was how much was everybody else going to cover of what I was planning to present. But luckily, I think I pulled out quite a few things that haven't been presented yet. And I guess just another indication of the broad amount of different things that Randy was involved with. First off, I want to start off with a disclaimer, and this is probably pretty typical of what Randy might have done too. But anyway, Randy obviously was a team player, team builder, and a team promoter. I'm going to try to highlight some of the stuff that he did while he was at Kansas State, things that he was a major contributor in. However, with a team effort, it is often not clear who was responsible for the original idea, or sometimes even who was the biggest contributor. So please forgive me if I credit Randy with another original idea, especially some of the students and others that might be in the room. But for as much as I worked with Randy, we never kept records on who originated an idea. It was always a general discussion, and you know, he would always give more credit probably than he tried to take. The important thing to the end, and I know to Randy, would have been that progress was made, not who was responsible for the progress. The epiphany I had in putting together this presentation was to take more pictures of people. One thing I recognize, and it became apparent, and I think some other people have already mentioned this, is I take way more pictures of bugs than I do of people. And I think that's too bad. But I did dig out a few. Randy and I did start out working together back on Rich Edwards' soybean crew back at Purdue University in the mid-70s. And this is just, you know, one picture of some of the crew that we had that were involved at that time, and you can see Randy hanging off the post. But anyway, we did have a very interesting time with all the different personalities that we had at that time. And as other people mentioned, Randy, with his farm background, was always the one showing people how to fix equipment and how to make things work. One of the things that happened when I was there, Purdue University came the talk of the town. Our research, we did a lot of research down in a little town called Bedford, Indiana. And Purdue had a little research farm down there in this little town in southern Indiana. And it was probably, I want to say it was, you know, probably 3 hours or 3.5 hours from Manhattan. And Rich started out the first season I was there. Rich and Tom Turpin were both pretty new. I was one of the first students, and Randy was working as he was a student in the department, and then he was working in the summers for Rich. And the first season we were there, we would go down a lot of times on Monday, and we'd rent a room at a hotel, and we'd stay there for 2 or 3 days and come back to campus. Well, you know, that got to be pretty expensive if you're taking, you know, a crew of people down and staying for a week. So somehow Purdue was getting some house trailers from like a FEMA project. I don't know what they called it back then, but that had these house trailers. I think they'd been used after a tornado in North Carolina. And the 4-H department had got a hold of these trailers and was going to use them at the 4-H camp. But it ended up they had a couple more than they were going to use, and Rich made this deal to get one of those trailers hauled down to Bedford, Indiana. And they set it up on the research farm. And so this was our home the next summer. Now, the reason, I would like to say that the reason that we were the talk of the town was because of the cutting-edge soybean research that we were doing. But you got to remember, this was about, what, 4 or 5 years after Woodstock. The idea of a group of 9 or 10 people moving into this house trailer on the station had more of a commune aspect than of the research. And to top that off is our research team was not only, it wasn't an all-male research team. So at times we had like 9 people living in that trailer, a lot of times two girls that were helping us that summer and the rest of the guys. And the other thing that would happen, we'd go down on Monday and we're gonna stay all week. So we'd go to the local grocery store to get groceries for the week. And it would always one of the girls would go to the store, but it was a different guy. And so I'm sure that the word got around town, and I think we even heard about it from the farm manager, that it was a little unusual for a girl to show up with a different guy each week and buy about 3 grocery carts full of groceries. So anyway, but it was an interesting couple of summers that we worked down there. Another thing I could remember was one day, and Randy's not in this picture, but Ed Baczynski's sitting here in the front. We had a highboy sprayer, and Rich had worked out an agreement with the Hahn Company that was in, I think, in Indianapolis or somewhere in Indiana, to borrow a highboy sprayer each summer to put out our plots. And again, we would work back and forth. And not only did we work down in Bedford, but there was another farm on down south at SciPac. And so we had this highboy sprayer, which we would tow behind the pickup between all these different locations. And at the time, the speed limit was still about 70 miles an hour, and the interstates were all fairly new, and we had a brand new pickup truck. And so we would head to these fields, and when you got a 3-hour or more drive in front of you, you want to make it as quick as you can, and that 3 hours was at, you know, 65, 70 miles an hour, so we would tow that highboy sprayer. And I'm pretty sure that it was Randy that was out there one day, and on the wheels on that highboy sprayer, it said maximum speed 45 miles per hour. And I can still remember some of the discussion on whether we were going to abide by that or whether we were going to run it the speed limit. And I think it came out, since we'd already tested it, we knew it would do 70 miles an hour, and so we kept towing it. The other thing I can remember is Randy got married, and I don't know the exact date, but it was sometime in late June. No, it was a couple weeks before I got married. When he got married, the question came up of, you know, well, we'll have rice for the wedding. But somebody, and I don't know who to attribute this to, but somebody came up with the idea that rice, we've got all these soybeans in bags, you know, and why do we need to buy rice? And so at his wedding, we threw soybeans. And I still remember after that sometime that Randy had borrowed an uncle's car, I think it was. Oh, your dad's car. Okay, even worse. Anyway, he'd borrowed the car to drive from the reception. And he had to live until they traded off that car with the comments about the soybeans rolling out from underneath floor mats or coming out when they turned on the air conditioning. So maybe rice is a better idea. Anyway, I think already kind of talked about some of the stuff that at Iowa State and the mention that, you know, this dual major between entomology and agronomy. But anyway, in 1982, he showed up at Kansas State, and again, we came back together because I was working out at the Garden City at that time and had gotten a job about a year earlier. But as Mark Johnson mentioned, Randy was one of the early ones to recognize this continuum between research and extension. And so he actually, I think, lobbied to get his appointment split to this extension research appointment. He started out, from what I could find, going through as 100% extension, and he lobbied to get those research 10s. So, what I want to do next is go through some of what I gleaned as some of the major accomplishments that Randy had during his time at K-State. And again, some of these obviously are work of his students, but things that I think become very important. And one of the earlier talks that was mentioned, you saw some pictures of the work they did on blister beetles. And so I was really afraid that was going to take away from some of this, but he didn't really emphasize the importance of that. And one of the things is that obviously the blister beetles can have a severe impact on the horses. The other thing is horse hay sells for a much higher price than what cattle hay does. So, you know, there's a want from the farmers to be able to sell hay that is certified to be blister beetle free. And that's one of the common questions that we get. And I took this out of a little handout that Randy did in 2005. So I think it's a pretty good summary of all the different studies that he'd done on the blister beetles. But you know, the overall goal is to keep the blister beetles out of the hay. And one of the things they found in their research, that one of the things in order to do that is you need to keep the blister beetles alive. That if you somehow squash the beetles into the hay, or if the blister beetles die while the hay is being made, then you end up with those blister beetles in the hay. And before that time, as the picture showed, the sickle bar mower was often given as an, you know, how you would want to cut the hay. But Randy and his students found out that the problem with that is a lot of times then you end up driving over that windrow with the tractor, either on turns or somewhere during the process. And if the swarm happened to be where you turned around, that you would squash the beetles into that part of the hay. And so they found out that it was probably better to use the self-propelled swather and simply remove the conditioning rolls so that you would not squash the beetles into the hay. And while he found out there were ways that you could reduce the risk of blister beetles, he indicated they did not find a way to guarantee or to be able to certify that the toxic quantities wouldn't be in the hay. So, again, some of the things that they highlighted as major contributions was the idea of the self-propelled swather, the fact that killing the blister beetles with insecticides might not be a good idea because, again, they could end up dying in the hay, and it was better to let them try to move out of the hay as you harvested it rather than killing them just before you would harvest. And they also, by analyzing the hay, could find out that even though maybe the beetle would drop out of the hay when you harvest it, if they'd been crushed onto that plant, that the cantharidin would be deposited on the hay. So some very basic research, but really I think comes up with an impact on what we can tell producers about how to manage their hay. And the basic thing, what I come back to when I tell producers is that you can tell your client what you did to reduce the beetles in the hay. You can tell them what cutting it came from. You can tell them that you harvested it without using a crimper. You can, tell them that you look for beetles and didn't find any, but just don't try to certify that it's blister beetle free. Because it's funny how that, $100 horse turns into $1 million horse once it dies from blister beetles. Other things, obviously the corn borer research was one of the things that, again, that Randy contributed greatly to, from basic efficacy testing of the different insecticides to investigating the interaction between corn borer injury and the weed density in the fields that I think was also mentioned. As far as rootworms, one of the things here was one of the area projects that he was active on was our area-wide rootworm management team that we had in the late 90s. Jerry Wilde and Jeff Whitworth kind of headed that up, but there were several other people involved, including Randy. And one of the things that, you know, I think came out of that, you know, this area-wide project focused on trying to control the adults, and we were trying to use the semiochemicals and the low rates of insecticide. But the really bigger thing that came out of that was, you know, if done correctly, you could reduce that beetle population over the area and drive down the total population. And one of the things that I remember both Randy and I having discussions with Jerry, because the common practice was, is if the field was not going to be planted to corn the next year, if the grower said he was going to rotate out, the common practice was not to treat the field. Because why would you treat it if it's not going to be in corn the next year? And I think both Randy and I argued, well, if you don't treat it, then those beetles are going to be able to fly into the other fields. And so, you know, we were able to convince Jerry that we had to spray any field that exceeded threshold. And ours was one of the areas where we actually saw a suppression in beetle numbers. And I think if Randy and I hadn't been there to do that, you know, Jerry was going to leave those fields untreated. So I think, again, an impact that we may have had. One of the projects that we had during that corn rootworm area-wide project, too, was a student that Randy and I co-advised, Chris Daves. And he took, one of the things we decided was the area-wide management plant program was using yellow sticky traps. And Randy and I knew that the consultants weren't using yellow sticky traps. So one of the concerns we had was, you know, if we went all the way through this, then, and if it did work, then did you have to go with the yellow sticky traps, or could you rely on the sampling that the consultants were currently doing? And so with Chris, we set up two things. One is we did a survey of growers to find out what they were actually using, how they were sampling the crops, so to get that baseline data. And then we turned around and tried to make a comparison between sampling with whole plant visual counts and the yellow sticky traps. And I think his thesis has some pretty good data in there to show that you could come up with the same decision no matter which of the sampling methods you used. Unfortunately, I guess that, you know, BT corn started coming on about that time, the rootworm BTs, and one of the things that kind of fell apart was, in order to have an area-wide program, if you're going to treat a field to keep those beetles from flying to your neighbor's field, was you would have had to set up a real tight community organization to do that. And unfortunately, we didn't get that part set up. And then again, with the rootworm hybrids coming on, you know, the need for an area-wide rootworm reduction plan maybe never came to fruition. On BT corn, again, Randy did several things there, again, from a lot of initial studies just on the efficacy of the hybrids based on the genetics that the companies provided. And then also a lot of working on the resistant prevention strategies, and a lot of that's already been talked about. It's already been mentioned about the soybean aphid work. Jumping on a new pest that was invading. And I know in Kansas, he wrote some grants to where we got some funding to do some initial detection work on that pest at about 2002. Randy was one of those guys always looking for a new toy. And so computers, cameras, video equipment, digital video editing equipment, you know, he was always out there trying to be on the lead of many of these things. And one of the projects that we got started on early that wasn't Randy, I guess Randy and I got more or less dumped into this. When we got there, Fred Poston and Steve Welch were working on corn expert system. And I don't think it ever really made a final release. When you think about their idea was we were going to come up with a computer-aided decision model that would cover every decision you would have to make in a cornfield. And if you think about the change that's happened over the last few years, you can see how that's really a never-ending project. But one of the things that I think probably did have an impact on Randy and I both was Fred's insistence that you must be able to make a decision, because the producer doesn't have the option to not make a decision. And he was always challenged us, you know, do you want, you know, the decision to be made on the best research and best ideas possible, or just to have the producer make it on some other reasoning. So he pushed us, you know, to try to have the best information possible, but if you didn't have exactly what you needed, to still try to make a decision. And that may have had an impact on how he worked on that 205 group, to know that you had to come out with some plan that had the best science, but yet would have, you know, a practical aspect to it. Another project that Randy got me involved with was a project that was some software called FolioViews. And what this was kind of a data management system where the idea was to get all of this, we worked on trying to get all of the old extension literature into, you know, at the time most of that it was like hard copy material, and there was no way to search it, no way to find anything. And so we spent a lot of time trying to digitize all that information, retype it if we needed to. There was some scanning software available that we could scan some of that text, and anyway, try to pull all that stuff in. And this was another one of those things that, you know, never, you know, something else came along fairly quickly. But we did get a lot of that stuff into digital form that eventually got rolled over into other aspects so we could keep track of that information.
Greetings and good evening to you from the campus of Kansas State University. You're tuned this evening to an informational program on European corn borer management. As you corn growers can well attest, the European corn borer is a menacing insect pest, hampering production and very costly in that interference with corn production. The purpose of this program is to examine European corn borer management thoroughly in depth. And with the benefit of the collection of expertise we've assembled this evening for you, we will introduce them later on in the program. They come to us from the University of Nebraska, Iowa State University, and Kansas State University.
Okay, so this was an indication of Randy's, you know, kind of foresightedness in that he put together, in 1993, we did this satellite TV program. And myself, John Wachowski, he was mentioned as one of the NC205 people, Marlon Rice, and Eric Atkisson was our local radio person that helped do the intro into the program and moderated the program.
The second scenario we painted for you earlier had to do with this management situation, corn in the silking stage this time. First generation larval age distribution available, warmer temperatures than normal. We're planting 100 or growing 100 day corn hybrid here. 12 of 100 plants found with second generation egg masses, and control measures considered 75% effective. We'll turn to Randy Higgins of K-State Extension for a response to that. And Randy, what do you think at the outset hearing those parameters?
Well, Eric, one of the things that we're working on is having a lot of information in this situation. That's not unusual from a farmer's standpoint, particularly if they have a scout or a consultant working in the field. Notice we talked about having available a larval age mass distribution, and this would be from the first generation tunneling or feeding within the plant, so we can determine as well as the crop stage, the soaking stage, how rapidly those two organisms are developing both together and independently in response to air temperatures. And so what we have is quite a bit of information. We could go through a paper publication, a standard recommendation, all states produce the 12 egg masses per 100 plants would say probably you're close to a treatment decision. But really to do a field-by-field management, let's use the rest of the information. And let's tie it all together. And we have some very nice computer models available from all these states, which can help you use that to make a dollars and cents evaluation. How much will I gain or lose? You can do what-if scenarios if I substitute products that would be more or less effective and lots of other things. So that's where we try to look before we made a decision on whether to treat that field or not.
And you're going to let us know a little more about that computer software available further on in the program, whether you're about that a little bit.
Okay. I guess, you know, one of the things, and, you know, we, again, as an example of Randy, you know, going and jumping on new technology, maybe one reason to kind of show that I probably doubled or tripled or quadrupled the number of people that listened to that program that night. But I think we did get at least one phoned-in question. But you know, it's one of those things we don't know the impact of some of that. I don't know how many of you worked with putting together web pages on your websites and stuff, but you know, you never quite know how big your audience is. But you know, we were able to utilize, you know, a lot of that information in other ways and kept moving things along. And if nothing else, it made us formalize all those thoughts in our heads to answer those questions that we proposed in that video. And I was surprised that video is still around. We now have it on DVD, so if anybody needs any of that information. His technology, you know, use of technology was recognized across the university. One of the things I found out in reading part of his CV over again, he was chairman of the KSU Agricultural Technology Committee that helped establish our email, the research extension email for our university. He was on the Electronic Publications Committee when they were trying to establish how they were going to move things from all paper to digital publications. On another committee on the effective use of technology in 1985. So you know, his, you know, going after and the new toys to play with did a lot more than just what it did in the entomology department to move things along, and he was recognized for that. One of the fallacies when you think about technology, and this was really true for Randy, is it just allows you to do more. And if you were like Randy, it still meant that you worked through the night to get things just right. And so, you know, I think everybody's probably got a story of Randy of where he worked to the very last minute trying to get everything just right for a presentation or get something to work. And it took even longer when the computer crashed. And in those early days, there was some problems with the equipment we had. I actually still have this computer. Not that I'm using it; it's in storage. But this was one of the first portable computers we had. It was the size of a suitcase. It had an 8.5-inch monochrome monitor. It had a space for a couple of floppy drives. I think it had 20. It didn't come with a hard drive, but I think the one I had, I put a card in it for 20 megabytes. And I heard somebody going into the getting off the airplane and talking to a friend. His new computer is 2.5 pounds, and I suppose it's got at least a couple gigabyte hard drive. So anyway, things have changed. But one of the reasons I went down and dug this thing out of my basement and took a picture of it was I still remember Randy telling the story about that he was on the second floor of Waters Hall. There at K-State, and one day when he was, I'm sure he was carrying about 4 or 5 things up the stairs at once, not just the computer, but when he got to the top of the stairs, I think he had to set things down to rejuggle what all he had in his hands, and he set the computer down right on the top step, and it went sliding all the way down the stairs and hit the wall at the bottom. But these things were built on government military specs, and it still worked, so they were reliable. I think on Randy's extension efforts, the one thing I'd highlight, and I'll try to cover in the next few minutes, is that, he had this real thing for, I think living up to the motto of delivering useful and practical information to the people. And his goal, I guess, was to use every avenue possible. And again, in going through some of his CV, that'll become apparent. But again, he was a team player. When Randy started, I think this was the group that we had in the office. And at that time, they had like a central secretarial area, and all of the extension workers surrounded, their offices surrounded the secretary. And so it was Randy, Leroy Brooks, Don Mock, and Don Kress were the ones on campus. And then off campus, we had three extension entomologists at various places in the state. And you got to remember that when he started back in 82, this was before internet, before email, cell phone. We had portable phones, but not cell phones. And it was before digital cameras. What we relied on then, and in that area, like I said, they had this open office, or offices surround the secretary, so it was an open office concept. And I remember Randy talking a lot about that, they'd be on the phone talking to somebody, and somebody in the other office would realize what they were talking about and come in and give their opinions. Or if they got a phone call and didn't know the answer, he could just yell across into the next office to Leroy Brooks and have Leroy help answer the questions. So they had kind of an informal sneaker network of where they went back and forth and helped each other out. In the late 70s and early 80s, especially in Kansas, that's where crop consulting was rapidly expanding, due to a large part to the very large farms that were developing. Producers just didn't have the time to go out and manage their fields by themselves. We had some very serious insect problems, especially in southwest Kansas with southwestern corn borer. I think that probably the reason that Larry Bushman and I are in southwest Kansas was because of the problems that they originally had with southwestern corn borer. The IPM push, the idea of scouting and the treatment thresholds, there was a lot of interest in developing those kind of scouting techniques, and with the consulting industry growing, there was a ready-made audience there. And then, obviously there were a lot of new market compounds and stuff coming onto the market, and we had, new chemicals coming along, so a lot of interest in how to utilize those new technologies. One of the areas that Randy and I spent a lot of time on the first few years was with our timing models. Again, Fred Poston and his students had done a lot of work on building these models. It was kind of Randy and my idea to sell those to the people. And so we spent a lot of time developed publications and a lot of times putting out newsletters and getting those samples so we can make predictions and put those in the newsletters. The newsletter at that time, I think, was one of our major avenues to try to get information out to the agents and to the consultants, and Randy was always a constant contributor to that effort. Our management guides, like many other states, we had guides that tried to put out information on the seasonal abundance, the sampling, host resistance, cultural controls, along with those insecticide recommendations. And I didn't go back and look exactly, but I know in 1981 when I started, we had one management guide for all those field crops, and I don't remember how many pages when it was fairly thick. By the time Randy was around a few years, one of the things we did, we decided, we had, hundreds of wheat producers, but maybe we only had a few alfalfa producers. And so he said, well, why should we put, everything about alfalfa in a guide, and most people maybe not even want that section. So I think he was one of the ones that decided that we divide those up by commodity. But the other thing is we kept growing those booklets, and they just kind of got bigger and bigger. And so now with the technology we have now, we're trying to probably move some of that to the web and reduce the amount of text that we actually print each year. But I think his push to get out all that information. This slide kind of got messed up a little bit somehow in the formatting, but anyway, I'm pretty sure that he was the one that came up with this idea for PEST, which is a group of training materials that we give out to the county agents each year, and I assume that because I think it started in 1983, which would have been the first spring that Randy was there, and I would also think that, you know, thinking up that title would be something Randy probably would have done. In addition to all the field crop work, and we've hardly touched on, they also did some work with stored grain management, and I think that probably got assigned to him as being an area that they needed some extension effort in. And so he did a lot of work of putting out publications and flyers and stuff on grain management and giving talks and that. As far as extension publications from his CV, he was the author or co-author on at least 33 numbered publications, contributor to 12 different crop production handbooks at Kansas State, and also some regional crop production handbooks. Numerous other extension documents, including one that's been very popular, is the Diagnosis of Corn Production Problems in Kansas. Collaborator on the USDA Stored Grain Advisor software, and then some limited distribution publications that, you know, we started out with a series we called Limited Distribution because they didn't go through our distribution center, but they were electronic and we put them up on the web. So I think probably before long they were more widely distributed than our regular extension publications. He put out one of his publications was Blister Beetles on Alfalfa that was done fairly early on. Here's one on rootworm management in field corn. So these are just some of the examples of some of those extension bulletins that we put out. Radio interviews, again, picking up from his CV that he did at least 190 radio interviews in 23 years. Again, using probably every avenue possible. Media interviews, these are the ones that a lot of times, you know, the magazine or newspaper or something called you to get information, and he had a wide smattering of those, everything from things in the IPM Practitioner to articles in the New York Times, Soybean Digest, Manhattan Mercury, you know, just a whole variety of things. And so this is an indication that people recognized Randy as an authority, when you're getting these calls from these different media sources. The other side of that is the ones that you kind of generate, where you go to the KSU News Service and work with the editor there to put out articles. And one of these I thought was kind of humorous is that like one week he put out a thing on how Kepcher lost as a miticide for Western Kansas, and it was a week or two later he put out one, EPA reverses itself on Kepcher and Kepcher use reinstated. So you do get that opportunity of playing both sides of an issue, I guess. So just many different things. One I can, and I didn't go back and dig up the videotape, and I wish maybe I would have. He had a videotape one time. There was an outbreak of walking sticks in a soybean field, and he got some video footage of that. And I remember he was just, you know, so it was such a weird experience, and he was so excited about having, you know, caught that on videotape. The obvious extension meetings and schools, he indicated again in his CV he had done more than 500 winter schools, field days, various types of meetings. And so, you know, just again that opportunity if, you know, if he was ever asked to speak, I think he made every effort to get there. In addition to the extension things, the scientific presentations, everything from presentations at the international congresses to presentations at the national meetings in the North Central Branch. I think 15 international, 48 national, and 67 regional publications where he was either presenter or co-presenter. He worked with the Certified Crop Advisor Program for several years and developed questions and for the testing and again working with the consultants. Video, again, Randy and Leroy were heavily involved in capturing insect behavior and pest insects on tape. And this is something that we're still, you know, trying to utilize and get. You know, when they started, the technology really wasn't there because it was all just analog VHS tape. And it's like, what do you do with it? Because it's a real hassle to try to set up and get it to play at a meeting. We're just now really getting to where we can actually link these into a PowerPoint presentation and allow them to play during a meeting.
Something we need to be concerned with as corn reaches the silking stage. One secret to good management is to inspect fields at 3 to 4 day intervals throughout the entire silking period. The key is to know how to look for eggs or newly hatched larvae. We do this by examining the leaves in the ear zone. Look both on the upper and lower leaf surfaces. The adults lay their eggs in small, inconspicuous masses. Now, they're easily overlooked, but with a little practice, they become easier to find. European corn borer egg masses vary in.
And what I wanted to just give you a feel for is I think we do need to be able to utilize more of that video, because it really shows you what's going on in the field. And a lot of times we just flash up a picture of the insect. We know what it's supposedly representing. We know that it's an egg mass. We know that it's, size of a dime. But with the video, where you can actually zoom in and zoom out, I think it gives you a different perspective of where that's at. And I think, over the years, hopefully, that's one of the things we'll build on. One of the big contributions that Randy made was this diagnosis at a distance idea as digital technology came along. Randy wrote a fairly large grant proposal to get this technology to where we could utilize that. We had this diagnosis at a distance being developed there in the late 90s, around 2001, when they came out with the defense funds and started these diagnostic network systems. That was one of the things that was plugged into that, to be able to do diagnosis at a distance. And actually, I think it's being used both in the Great Plains region and in the Northeast region. It's already been mentioned about it, the experiences in extension entomology course, his leadership roles. I think Mark Johnson highlighted those as state leader, interim department head, and the interim associate director. Again, many awards that he won. Everything from educational material awards for some of the publications that he was on to poster displays at meetings. Probably the two bigger awards was the National Excellence in Integrated Pest Management Achievement Award in 2001 and the C.B. Riley Award in 2003. The list of some of his students, some of them that were here today and some that were unable to make it today, but a good list of students. As far as quotes, again, his thing on mentoring was very important, and again, his strong belief in teamwork, team responsibility, and team recognition. And I think a lot of times he never put his name first on some of the things that were really important.
K-State Research and Extension will continue to provide information in a number of formats so that users of the technology of pest management can reach the best decisions possible with the information available. I hope you will continue to look to K-State Research and Extension as an avenue of gathering information useful in reaching decisions about pest management.
So anyway, I think, that kind of summarizes what I think Randy would have liked to have left us with is his idea that still look to the research and extension for information on pest management. Closing thoughts, in my mind, life is short. Enjoy all the small things. Don't take things too seriously. Randy always had an excellent sense of humor. Make time for the fun things in life, and take more pictures of friends and coworkers.